What if it's death that teaches us how to live? Let's talk about it with David Gibson on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
Hey, we're so glad you're here. I say it all the time, and I mean it all the time. You always have a place at our table. And in case you're wondering, and you've just joined us, I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. Matthew Porter is our executive producer. It's a new year, so Matthew is turning over a new leaf. Actually, a lot of leaves, and then eating those leaves with ranch dressing. And our producer, Jinx, is in his little glass booth. Jinx would do New Year's resolutions, but hey, how do you improve on perfection? And humility. And Dr. George Bingham yes. is the president of Key Life. And our video director and one-man IT department, John Myers, is in his tech bunker. George focuses on all the numbers, and John just concentrates on the ones and the zeros. I had to have somebody explain that to me. If you do, and you give us a call, I'll explain it to you.
Yeah.
And Kathy Wyatt, of course, is the soft feminine side of the program. Kathy, Matthew wrote a sonnet to your baked good. You want to hear it?
Oh, absolutely.
How do I love thee? Let me count the weight. That's so bad. Our guest needs to know that for all of these very bad lines, Matthew Porter, our executive producer, is responsible. I just want you to know that I wouldn't say things like what I just said on my own. By the way, David Gibson, and I've been looking forward to this, is a member of Trinity Church in Aberdeen, Scotland, a minister. He serves co-editor from heaven. He came and sought her, and he's the author of Reading the Decrees, Exegesis, Election, and Christology, and Calvin and Barth. And should you ever be in a hurricane or a flood, stand on that book and it'll keep you dry. It's not exactly the most exciting subject that will sell millions, but I'm sure it's profound. And David's newest book is called, and I hold it in my nicotine-stained fingers, is titled Living Life Backward, How Ecclesiastes Teaches Us to Live in Light of the End. Frankly, I spent the morning with this book, and I read the opening paragraph, which I will proceed to read to you, and promise you that if you'll keep your dial where it is or your computer where it is, it'll be worth your while. But it doesn't start as an upper. David writes, I'm going to die. By the time you read, you read these lines, I may even be dead. It's not that I have a virulent disease or terminal illness. A doctor has not pronounced on how I'm going to die. I don't know when I will die. I just know I will. I'm going to die, and so are you. But here is why I wrote the book, I'm Ready to Die. Well, you know, I read that and I thought, oh man, this is going to be an upper. You know, old people, and I'm old as dirt, don't like to talk about death. We live in denial, and we do our best to avoid it. And this book has forced me to look at it, and I might say with great insight and joy as I read it. I'm a cynical old preacher, and Ecclesiastes is my favorite book in the Bible. Well, you know, I'm big on the Gospels and stuff too, but I really love this book. In fact, my life verse, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, is from the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, for my cynical mind, cleans it out and makes me think I'm not crazy. I look around and see stuff falling apart and things that I cared about no longer in existence, to say nothing of people. And so I'm a cynic. I don't have a very high view of human nature, and I'm more cynical about myself than anybody else. But as I read your book, I saw things I've never seen before. I mean, I understood it in a way I've never seen before. I understood life better, and I understood what the preacher was saying. So, David, before we begin, I want to thank you for writing this book. What a dynamite book. Do you ever at 3 o'clock in the morning realize you're going to die and break out in a cold sweat? Who was it that said, I don't mind dying, I just don't want to be there when it happens? Are you really prepared for death?
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to be with you. And it's quite something to arrive on a radio show with a whole pile of strangers and be straight away talking about death, isn't it? Straight away. sure way to make friends. Yeah, exactly. I think that really is why Ecclesiastes is so striking, that it really can change your, we talked only about things being life-changing, changing your life. Ecclesiastes is so striking because it really can change your death. The 3 a.m. question, of course I lie there sometimes. I think if I'm really honest, I don't think I ever lie there fearing my own death or agonizing about my own death. I do, of course, lie there fearing that about my wife lying beside me, or my children. I've got 4 kids, 14 down to 8. And Ecclesiastes isn't saying and never says death is okay and the death of the people you love is okay. You know, just get used to it. You can be happy at the thought of that. That's not what Ecclesiastes is saying. It is saying your own death is something you can think clearly about in a way that stops you dreading it, fearing it, living as if it doesn't exist, as if it's not coming. I think that's the key thing. That's the key takeaway. The message of Ecclesiastes is helping you think about your own death. And you said there that you're an old cynic who doesn't like thinking about death. Older people don't like thinking about it, but I think it's mainly younger people who don't like thinking about it, isn't it? When you're older, you have to start thinking about it. It looks like it's real and like it's coming. But when you're a lot younger, you think this isn't happening at all. This will happen to other people, not me. And Ecclesiastes is the book that just presses pause in your life and says, hang on a minute, son, this is coming to you too. And if you prepare for it, the earlier you prepare for it, the earlier you accept that it's happening, the better your life will be. That's the startling message of Ecclesiastes.
You know, and it's an aside, but it really isn't. The way one deals with one's mortality is to look at death and kiss death on the lips. And most people don't do that. I was kidding about the denial. As you said, when you're old, you can't escape thinking about it. But I suspect, David, and you're considerably younger than me, that just working on this book, and you've worked on it a long time, even had to get extensions from your publisher, I read. you've been dealing with death, kissing that demon on the lips for a long time. Has that been a real gift to you?
Yeah, yes, it really has. I wish I could say I've lived as fully and as fruitfully as I try to outline in the book. You can live in the light of death, but my wife and kids will tell you I've still been as grumpy and sinful as you know, anybody who's never read Ecclesiastes or read my book. It hasn't changed my life in all the ways I would yet like it to, but it has certainly been an astonishing gift to me on many, many levels. Yeah, I'm really happy to tell you more about that.
You know, one of the things, and we'll talk about this on the other side of the break because we're running out of time here, but one of the wonderful things about Ecclesiastes is the freedom it gives the believer to live life, not just to go to church more and read the Bible more and pray more and be nicer, but the freedom to live life in its fullest as a gift that is given by God, without ignoring the dark side of life, where Ecclesiastes is quite clear. You don't have time to comment on what I just said, but you can, before we break, simply say, I agree with that, or I don't agree with that.
I agree with that. 100%.
You'll be back in the next segment, and we'll be back too. The name of the book is called Living Life Backwards: How Ecclesiastes Teaches Us to Live in the Light of the End. Trust me, this is a great book, and you need to get it. You need to study it and underline it before you die. We're leaving, but we're coming back.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have 4 mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction: How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These 4 mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We're glad you're here. We're hanging out with David Gibson. You can keep up with him on Twitter at DavidNGIBBO. And you can check out Trinity, aberdeen.org.uk. And you can look at what's happening in a great church, by the way.
David, you include, of course, in Ecclesiastes, discussion of that familiar kind of poetic discussion the preacher has about the seasons, contrasting seasons of life, the time to be born, time to die, time to kill, and time to heal, and so forth. And most people probably in the Western world, whether believers or non-believers, are familiar with that passage, but so often it's taken just selected out and just that portion. And you say that's a real mistake, that the real interpretation and understanding of that comes with the rest of the verses of that chapter. Can you kind of talk about that some?
Yeah, thanks, George. I think that's a really good question. I don't know about what it's like in the States with you guys, but over here in the UK, and where I am in Aberdeen in Scotland, I've heard several funeral services where these verses are read. You know, there's a beauty to them, isn't there? A lyrical kind of flow, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up. For everything there is a season, a time for every matter under heaven. And I guess, you know, you don't have to be Christian to find them interesting. I've heard them read by humanists at humanist funerals. It's the kind of we come, we go, this is life. Here we are at a funeral today. This is this person's time to die. And, you know, but it totally misses what the writer of Ecclesiastes is doing with all of that. And it misses it on lots of levels. I've never heard those words read at the death of a child or a young person. It's okay to do them at the death of an older person at a funeral. There's a kind of sense that there is a time for everything. This person's lived to a good old age. What happens if you're standing at the grave of somebody who's been taken from you completely prematurely, tragically, unexpectedly? It's not okay to say to human beings, to bereaved parents at that moment, oh, well, there is a time for everything, you know. And the writer of Ecclesiastes would never say that to parents like that. I don't think that's what he's doing with those words. I think he's saying that only if you realize that God is writing the story of the universe from beginning to end, and has put all these temporal times into an eternal perspective, only then do the times of your life have any real true meaning. The only comfort you could ever give to parents standing at the graveside of a child taken from them is what the writer goes on to say, verse 11, God has made everything beautiful in its time. He has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from beginning to the end. Sometimes you live in this world and you cannot tell how B follows A, how C follows B. The seasons and rhythms of life just seem to totally take you by surprise. There seems to be no meaning to the time for everything under the sun. The meaning comes from the fact that God is the one who knows the beginning from the end. And somehow, in a way that we cannot fathom or understand, God is going to take every single event in this universe, in the time frame of our individual lives, and God is going to put them together in a way that will be beautiful from beginning to end. And unless you have that bigger perspective that moves beyond simply the times for everything under heaven, to see that God is the one putting all the times together into one coherent whole, actually, the times can leave you completely blindsided in life, can't they? It's why I think our response to the pandemic should be very different as believers from the perspective of the world around us. That the very best the world can do is to say, look, we've been here before, the Spanish flu, 1921, whatever. And that's kind of as big as a perspective gets. But Christian people say, yeah, all of that, and God is writing the story of the universe, that he's maybe doing something through this pandemic that nobody else can see yet. Maybe we won't know for generations, but God is in this. God is at work. God is stitching everything together into one coherent whole. And particularly as well, at the end of chapter 3, the writer goes on to say, and what really gives all of that coherence, what brings comfort in all of that, is that at the end of it all, there will be judgment. So there is a time for everything under the sun, a time to seek, a time to lose, a time for war, a time for peace, a time to mourn, a time to dance. What if you have suffered terribly in one of those times, suffered terrible injustice? You know, the best, if you're going to stop at verse 8 at a funeral, the best you can say is, you know, sorry, tough luck. But if you keep reading in chapter 3, the best that you can then say is that at the end of all those times, there is a loving and a righteous God who will bring everything to account in his courtroom. There will be justice and judgment at the end. So that's kind of what I mean, George, about, that's kind of a long answer to your question, but that's kind of what I mean about how you need to move beyond the, yes, take in the beauty of the poetry, but, you know, don't pack up and go home before you've had the punch of the prose that comes after it.
Mm-hmm. So getting to the title, and maybe we can answer this fully on the other side, the living life backward, you know, death is an absolute that we all have to reckon with. And the beauty of an absolute is that it helps us measure things. You know, it helps us, you know, a mile is always a mile, a pound is always a pound. And death is no different in the sense that you can measure values against it. Is that the idea of the approach of the book, to live life with that kind of larger perspective that, you know, we have a limited amount of time. Just tell us a little bit more about the concept of that, if you would, and we can maybe finish it on the other side.
Yeah, I think it's the idea of in the book that God has, death is not a value neutral thing that just means your heart stops, which is obviously what it means physically and biologically. Death is a theological entity that wasn't here at the beginning. God has placed it in the world as a form of his curse on humanity's rebellion. And because God has put it in, God is doing something with that death. It is a limit God has placed on fallen creatures in their desire to be God. Because God is doing something with death, that makes it incredibly fruitful, actually, for us to reflect on what he's doing with it.
Well, so good. You know, if you're an existentialist, the fact of death leans or gives importance to the now, the minute, the second where you're living. But ultimately, if you're not a believer, it's all meaningless. It doesn't mean anything, and it doesn't matter. So you have to face death, and you have to face that reality too, and we don't. So deal with it. We're coming back to talk.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work, instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Hey, you're listening to Steve Brown, etc., and thanks for hanging out with us. I genuinely mean that. If you could use an occasional reminder that God's not angry at you if you're a believer, then resolve to join our email list. Just go to keylife.org/subscribe. Matthew, you might want to rephrase what you said before the break and then have David comment a little bit more on that.
Sure. Yeah, that's my great radio experience, is ask a big question and then give a tiny little window for you. So it's hitting on all the pistons. I was just curious about, to tee up the question again, the approach of the book, Living Life Backward. You know, and you kind of got into it a little bit as far as explaining what that means, living in light of the fact that we have a finite amount of time here.
Yeah, so it's the message that God has put, so that there's a kind of, I mean, Steve said before the break about existentialism, there's a kind of nihilistic, atheistic worldview. We're all going to die, so eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. How is the message of Ecclesiastes different from that? Because it does actually sound very similar. There are parts of Ecclesiastes that seem to say that you're going to die, so go eat, drink, enjoy life with your wife, because you don't know when you're going to die. It does sound similar. The difference is that the death that is coming is a death that God has placed in the world. It's God's intervention to say to fallen men and women who in the garden said to God, look, you've made a good start here, but you push off and we'll take it from here. We'll finish the project. We're in charge now. And God says, well, hang on. No. You've done what I told you not to do. Death is now a reality. And the theological meaning of death is that it is God's no to our human attempt to live without him and be gods ourselves, to carry on the Babel project. Death is always there to say that's not right, that you're not going to live forever. Once you realize that God is doing that with death, the message of Ecclesiastes takes that as a given, and then it says, so once you accept that you're not here to make a name for yourself forever, you're not here to live forever, you're not here to be the top dog, to be God, you're not here to control everything, to understand everything. Ecclesiastes says, I hope you can see that God is speaking to you through the coming reality of death. Death is like this constant reminder to you that you are just a creature, and God is the creator, and God is eternal, and you are not. And once you see that, it begins to seep into your bones in a kind of liberating way, where you realize, I don't have to conquer the world. I don't have to have the answer to absolutely everything. I don't have to live forever. If God thinks I'm not important enough for me to have to live forever, what difference will that make? If I start accepting that I don't have to live forever, and you just begin to find it liberating you, it means that you stop working as hard in a bad way. You come home earlier and spend time with your children. You give away more of your money. You stop striving, in Ecclesiastes' words, for two hands of gain, and you just become happy with one. One is enough. I may not have everything I want, but at least I'm enjoying what God has given to me. But that's kind of, does that make sense, Matthew?
Yeah, it does. It kind of just colors your entire perspective on what we're after. That's actually very liberating. It's not sad at all. Wow.
And David, it plays into the theme, and that's what we're about at Key Life, of freedom and grace and joy.
Yeah.
You know, when you know you're going to die and you don't have to be God anymore, there is the wine tastes better and the music is more danceable and the friends more important and the families incredibly a gift to all of us. If we're going to die, if we're going to live forever, it's what the hey, man, I'll do that tomorrow or next day. I'll have time, but we don't have time.
Yeah. It's what everybody says, isn't it? We all know people who've had the diagnosis that says you've only got 6 months left. And you just see it happen. Everything comes into focus. There's nobody in that situation is saying, do you know what? I wish I'd spent more time in the office. I wish I'd earned more money. It all becomes about relationships. It becomes about the good gifts that God has given. I wish I'd enjoyed this more, or I'm going to enjoy this more. The message of Ecclesiastes is don't wait for the deadly diagnosis, because it's already been given. God pronounced it in the garden. It is coming to you. It is real. So accept that it's real now and live as if you've had that doctor telling you the terminal diagnosis. You can actually get on with life yourself in a way that those people do when they receive that news.
That's profound. It really is. And I personally believe that a lot of the tragedy and the anger and the hatred and the building of empires, that all of that is an effort to avoid facing the fact that it's one out of one. It does explain a lot of the shouting and a lot of the nonsense and the craziness go on. Keep on dancing. Don't look. It's gaining on you. Pretend it's not there and have another beer. Yeah. There's some attraction to that, but it's not good enough. We'll talk more about it on the other side of the break. It was
was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Hey, thanks for spending this hour with us. I told you at the beginning that it sounded like a downer, but it really isn't. Some of the most profound things that we've ever heard on this broadcast have been spoken by David and in his book, Living Life Backwards, How Ecclesiastes Teaches Us to Live in the Light of the End. And just as a side note, in the title, backwards is spelled backwards. And nice given touch. My dyslexia, this is the first cover that ever made sense. Kathy?
David, I'd like for you to comment on the word vanity. You talk about that in your book and say that there's a problem with our understanding of the word vanity, and you actually refer to the Hebrew word. And I just wondered if you would, you know, kind of pick that apart a little bit and give us some what's going to be, I'm sure, some really helpful information about that word.
Yeah, thank you. I think it comes right at the very start of the book, Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 1, vanity of vanities, if you're reading the ESV, English Standard Version, meaningless is the NIV. It's that word that put me off preaching it for quite a long time. And when I started to preach it with a colleague, I just thought, what on earth are we going to do with this book? As a young man, healthy, happily married, I just thought, how on earth am I going to say everything is meaningless? It's not meaningless. I'm quite happy, actually. And what wavelength is this Bible book on? I couldn't quite get my head around it. And then the more I read and studied, the more I realized that for whatever reason, the particular English translations that we've gone with, vanity in the ESV, or there is a reason why the translations do that. It's because the word is broad. They're trying to encapsulate a lot of different things in a lot of different nuances in one English word. But the reality is that the Hebrew word for vanity or for meaningless, hevel, is more commonly used in other places to refer to shortness of time span rather than meaningless or even vanity. It tends to suggest, doesn't it, like I say in the book, the philosophy student who comes home after one semester at university and tells his mum and dad, "I've discovered the universe has no meaning." It's not meaningless in an existential sense. It's meaningless in a brevity of life sense. So to give you a couple of other examples, you've got Psalm 39, "Behold, you have made my days a few handbreadths. My lifetime is as nothing before you. Surely all mankind stands as a mere breath, a mere hevel. A man goes about as a shadow." You get the same thing in Psalm 144. "Oh Lord, what is man that you regard him, or the son of man that you think of him? Man is like a breath, hevel." And then it's illustrated in the second part, "His days are like a passing shadow." So the meaning of that word has much more to do with brevity. It has much more to do with elusiveness. Just like life comes and goes really quickly, so life is hard to get your hands on. So you know, if you're to ever, if you were ever able to witness somebody smoking a pipe, for instance, and you see the smoke in the room and you think, I'm going to get hold of that and keep it in my pocket. You can't, can you? It's just there and then it's gone. And I think that's what Ecclesiastes is doing with that word. That is what life is like. It's short and it just seems to fall through your fingers. You know, some people get the statue, some people get the book named after them or the football stand named after them. Some people's name gets memorialized forever, but 99% of us, you come, you go, and your great-great-grandchildren won't even know you lived. That's what the word means.
Wow.
Does that help? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Oh, it does.
Especially because
I'm going to throw away the ESV. I'm not going to use it anymore now that you have allowed me to see the obvious error in the version that I use most of the time. But it's so good.
And David, Steve is a pipe smoker, so we see the pipe smoke all the time.
And they keep trying to put it in there
deliberately. I saw that.
Yeah. Well, you can't grasp it, but you can certainly smell it all the time.
But David, it's expensive tobacco. They ought to be thankful. I could smoke your tobacco, the Presbyterian mixture.
I was just about
foul.
To say that's. Oh, is it? That's the only type I have is Presbyterian. I have to get new stuff. Okay.
Listen, you know, I was thinking as we've been talking during this hour that this, if we could ever get through, is the message. I mean, this is an incredible message of evangelism. When, and it always does, when the meaning we create begins to run out and we realize it, Ecclesiastes is the answer. I mean, it's incredible. You got to mention Jesus here or there, but this will bring a pagan to reality quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I find when we preached it that, and I've been preaching 15 years and I did this quite early on, very few things connect with people like this material does. The wisdom literature, you know, yeah. For those of you guys who are preachers, for those who are listening, wisdom literature connects with people in a profound way because it's earthy. It's right down where people are living, and pastors think we want to do justification by faith, election, predestination, you know, let's do Romans, Ephesians. Fine. You've got to do them. But people's eyes light up when you're talking Proverbs, Song of Songs, Ecclesiastes, because we get those things immediately. We know exactly what's going on in those. They connect to our life. And for sharing the gospel, they're an excellent way in with people to say, look, the world that we Christian people live in, it's your world. It's the same world. We're all going to die together. So can I help you think about your death well, better than you have been? And using it to point people to the Lord Jesus is a wonderful thing to do.
Oh, it really is. And, you know, we're seeing a veritable kind of semi-awakening among young people across America. And it's right at this point, you know, they're singing, but they don't know it. What's it all about, Alfie? Mm-hmm. And they're beginning to realize if there's not something more than this, yeah, then this is not worth it. And the suicide rate goes up, the depression, the psychosis, the neurosis, all of that stuff. And I'm going to start giving your book to my pagan friends because I'm so religious, I don't have many. I'm going to see who's the most pagan on this staff, make sure they read this book. David, you're a delight. And it's amazing to me we can talk to somebody in Scotland, see you, and have this kind of conversation. And I know how busy you are. Thank you so much for taking your time
pleasure.
To be with us.
It's been lovely.
Yeah,
thank you very much for having me. It's been wonderful. Really
hope we can do it again. Yeah. You keep writing books. We'll keep talking. Okay. Guys, we're going to tell you who we're going to do it unto next week. So you're going to be amazed, surprised. Please, so don't go away.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, what a great hour. That was new to me. A lot of it, not new in terms of that I'm going to die. That's old stuff. I know that. Or the reality of what's on the other side. Ecclesiastes says, eat, drink, and be merry. Then you die, and you eat, drink, and you can be merry for all of eternity. But what was said at the end of this thing is really important. If you're listening on the radio or you've turned on our video version of this and you're not a believer, and it eats away at you sometimes, you might want to get this book. It makes you think. And it's not altogether happy thoughts, but it can become meaningful thoughts that are almost profound in the way you live your life. I think everybody at some time during their lives stop and sing that old song, What's It All About, Alfie? Or if Peggy Lee, is this all there is? And when you start asking those questions, you're on the right road. You're beginning to ask a question that could literally change your life, make it more full and free, to know you're forgiven and free, and that there's meaning to every bit of it makes all of the difference in the world. I wish I'd read this book before I finished the manuscript on my last one, Laughter and Lament, The Touchstones to Radical Freedom. Kathy, who's going to be on next week?
Well, I noticed you said before the break that people were going to be surprised, and actually you are the one who's going to be surprised because I have no earthly idea. You know, something happens in January. Everybody goes into hibernation or something after the holidays. They don't have any time, and it's really hard. Maybe it's us. You know, it's really hard to find people that want to be on our program. Actually, that's not true. We just have a lot of irons in the fire, and we don't have anything confirmed yet. But we will be brilliant. I mean, there's just no doubt about that.
I tell you what, we're going to all confess our three greatest sins publicly.
You know what? The last time we did a show with just us, we had some great numbers, didn't we, Matthew?
You know, Kathy, it's not about the numbers, but
you're going to die.
Oh, really? That's what you said in the meeting the other day. I know. How great it was.
Guys, we're going to go. We're going to come back same time, same place next week. And it's our fond hope that you will join us. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. And that gives you a wide, wide berth.
To the 12-hour version of it.
For a full hour, all the talk you refuse to do.